Hi, everyone. This is Aaron. Today is Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. I'm recording from my home studio, and you are listening to the Sound Words podcast. I'm making several new changes to the podcast. The first is that I'm going to be very focused on making this a podcast about worship leading. The second is that it's going to go back to a free-flowing conversation with very little editing. And the third thing is that I'm going to have a guest on the show. Today's guest is Angie Jojana. We recorded this conversation about a week ago, and we're going to talk about different piano teachers, leading versus performing, and her story of experiencing the most stage fright she's ever had. Guitar or piano? That is always the first question I want to ask you. What do you prefer?
Guitar or piano?
Because on Sunday you were playing guitar.
Yeah. I would have to say piano. Even though as a, well, okay. Are we talking worship leading or just like as in like instrument of choice?
Good point. Okay, let's go worship leading first and then just straight up instrument of choice.
Ooh, okay. That's hard. I feel in terms of worship leading, I think the guitar is more versatile, so I would actually use it for worship leading more. Just because in terms of, like, I feel like there's a lot of things you can do with it. Rhythmically, it's a little more, it kind of has more variety in terms of, like, you can play both fast and slow, and a guitar by itself tends to have more effect than a keyboard does by itself. However, as, like, an individual instrument, like between the two, I think I would always say piano, just because I've known it, I've played it for longer, and it's, to me, it's a lot more fun being able to kind of see really in front of you, whereas guitar, it's like kind of have to like look down to the side to figure out what you're doing. But yeah, so
you're worshiping, like,
I think guitar.
Yeah, you're like a unique worship leader for a variety of reasons. But I mean, one reason is because you're actually like a teacher too. You know, you're not just like, oh yeah, like this is what I do for fun. No, like you actually teach people how to play music and how to lead worship. So like, do you ever like do something on stage where you're like, oh, I probably shouldn't do that because I tell my students not to do that, but I did it anyways.
There are definitely moments where I catch myself, or just in general, even while I'm in the middle of a lesson, I tell my students something. I'm like, I always kind of have to take a step back and be in my head and be like, do I do that? Like, if I'm expecting them to do that, I need to make sure that I do that. It's rare to think of that while I'm leading, I feel, because, there's so much going on when you're on stage, and there's kind of, like, a lot more at stake, like, in the moment. So it's, like, teaching and, like, thinking of my students, last thing on my mind when I'm worship leading. But definitely in the setting of a lesson, I'm always like, do I actually do that? Am I being hypocritical if I'm not doing it and telling them to do it? So yeah.
Do you think you're a mean teacher?
No, I am definitely not. I feel I'm quite nice to my students, and but there are moments where I do have to pull on a tough face and be like, no, you need to behave, and you need to, I've had to give the stern talk of you need to practice or else you're wasting my time and you're wasting your time and your parents' money. So I've had to give that talk a couple times, but other than that, I'd say I'm pretty easygoing and
I remember that talk. I had that talk from my piano teacher. I was like, I think I was elementary school, and like I was trying to play A Whole New World, you know, from Aladdin. And like, there's like this one part, I don't know, it must be the bridge or something, where there's like a key change. And like, I didn't care. Like, I was like, I'm not gonna practice this. I'm just gonna show up and try to do it. And I remember, like, I think we were like working on that part for like a month. And then my teacher was just like, okay, we're not gonna play this song anymore until you go home and practice this. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh my God.
But the sad thing is that I don't think I ever resolved that. I think I just said, okay. And then we just moved on to the next song.
Oh my God.
Did you ever not practice and get in trouble?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because in high school, I was convinced that I was going to be a singer and that voice would be my only thing. And so I kind of stopped practicing piano after like sophomore year. I mean, I still took lessons, and, you know, by my teacher's grace and by my parents' grace, like, they still kind of kept me in and, like, forced me to stick with it. But there was a point where I just wasn't practicing. I would come into my lesson and just straight up tell my teacher, like, I haven't done anything, like, just so you know. And she would still, like, force me to sit down and, like, work through something. So I guess I've never – I don't think I've ever gotten, like, in trouble. Anytime it would be like, oh, I didn't practice that much this week. I'm only remembering instances from when I was, like, in junior high and high school. I don't really – I switched around so many teachers in elementary school that it's hard to remember. But I finally settled with one teacher, I think maybe in, like, fifth or sixth grade. And I was with that teacher for maybe about 5 years, and I switched teachers finishing up high school. And anytime that happened, it was always just like, okay, well, let's see what we can do. Even now, sometimes it's like, I go to my lesson, like, I didn't really get this and I didn't really practice. And it's been overwhelming me because of midterms, and my teacher is still very gracious. She's like, okay, well, let's see, we can read through something. Or yeah, there's always something to work on. But I think as kids, it's really important. Yeah, I don't remember getting in trouble. I think because my parents always forced me to practice, so I did practice.
How come you switched around with so many teachers? I only had, like, maybe two or three piano teachers. Like,
growing up?
Yeah. How come you switched through so many piano teachers?
Well, so if I remember correctly, my very first private piano teacher – so I actually started taking piano in group lessons because that's just how the Yamaha system works.
Yeah, I did Yamaha too, yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, solfège and everything.
Yeah, so I had one teacher for, I actually don't know how long I was with her. She's this Russian lady, and I think she basically quit her job at Yamaha to go to Europe and, like, continue performing there or something.
Oh, wow.
And then so I just kind of switched around a lot of teachers per recommendation of, like, the director of the school, who was my group class teacher at one point, and at one point she was also my private teacher. I went through, let me see, of the ones that I remember, maybe like three or four teachers, before I finally settled with one teacher in, like, fifth grade. And so I think it's because I was young too, so it's like, oh, she has time, and, like, yeah. But I don't know if there's an exact reason why, other than some teachers left. One of my teachers, I think after I left her, like, got injured. Things happen. So
yeah. So it's more like, oh, stuff happens in their lives, and then you,
I think, and you find another teacher. And then students are forced to accommodate.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Okay, man. So like, you said that you, out of high school, you were just going to do voice only. And then you said, oh, I'm going to do piano and voice. So what's the story behind that? Why the switch?
Well, okay. So I applied to all of my colleges as a vocal performance major, thinking that I was going to be a singer because for the longest time I wanted to do musical theater. I wanted to be on Broadway. And, I knew the vocal training obviously would, like, get me there. So when it came down to my last two schools, so I was deciding between Chapman and then University of the Pacific because, and I almost went to UOP because I wanted to pursue vocal performance as well as music therapy, but it would have taken me 5 years and they didn't guarantee that my scholarship was going to carry over. And so there was all this certainty because I'd visited Chapman and I shadowed someone there and I was like, I really like this place. Like, I don't know what it is, but, like, I'd really love to go here. But I thought it was maybe me, like, being superficial, like, oh, the campus is pretty, you know. And I was like, oh, UOP, there's so much, like, educational value. And but then we found out that I actually had gotten more scholarship money from Chapman than I anticipated. And so I think that was kind of like our sign from God, like, okay, Chapman is where I'm going.
Okay.
And coming there, since I was only going to do vocal performance, my parents were kind of like, you know, maybe since you had this double major plan at UOP, you might want to consider pursuing something else. And I think my piano teacher at the time had been pushing for me to look into collaborative piano because she was like, in her eyes, it was that she felt I had all this potential and that I was going to just let it all drop when I got to school. And she was like, I don't want you to do that. I think you should really look into this. And so my mom told me, like, yeah, why don't you give it a try? And so I met with, in May of my senior year, I met with the my current piano teacher, who's the head of the club, KCA, the Keyboard Collaborative Arts Department, and had a good talk. I played a couple pieces for her, and she was like, yeah, we'd love to have you. And so it's kind of how it all started.
But, nice. So yeah. It was like you were encouraged then basically by your teacher.
Yeah, sort of. It wasn't like I dreamt something. Piano too. It was kind of like I was moved that way, but yeah. I'm really thankful that it happened.
I think it sounds like a good move to me. I mean, I don't know anything, but yeah, I mean, that sounds right up your alley. Okay, so what do you feel is your stronger suit, like your voice or your piano playing? And I guess I'm asking, like, what do you feel you're just more naturally like, okay, yeah, this is like, I'm more natural at this versus like, oh, I actually need to like work to refine this.
Between the two, oh, that's hard. If we're talking, classical stuff, like what I do at school, both are equally difficult in the sense where, for piano, I think a lot of times, because it's like, it's a very physical thing. I see everything in front of me and it seems like it should be so simple, but when like my hands aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, I get really frustrated because it's like, you know what you're supposed to do. Like, why can't you do it? And then with voice, it's hard also because it's an internal mechanism. You don't see any of it, and it's all by feeling. And it's just, like, for me, it's it was very, like, my first couple of years were very frustrating because my teacher was trying to push me to all these things. And I was like, I feel like I know what I should be doing, but I just can't sit right yet. Like, I don't know what's going on. It really wasn't until this past year that things finally started clicking. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I get it. And so I think to that, and in the classical area, I think both, I'd say, like, it's kind of, like, both have an equal hand in terms of, like, things that do come naturally. Expressivity in both areas comes naturally. It's the technical issues that are always, that have always been the difficult part and also the most frustrating part. For worship and, like, improvisation and stuff,
yeah.
I'd feel that's hard too.
You're too hard on yourself, Angie.
I think I have to say when it comes to worship music, probably piano comes more easily just because it's like it's so freeing for me to not have to like other than like the letters that are on the page and like the rhythm of the song, that's all you're really bound to, and anything else you could just do. So anything flies for the most part. And so I think, yeah, to that end, singing, I mean, it has it's the same challenges in like the stuff I do classically. Like you have to deal with the range issues with range and like in terms of like balance and like harmony and tone, depending on who you're working with. Yeah, but I think if we're talking the context of like church music, I think piano would, it's hard to say because I start off being involved in like worship as a singer.
Yeah, right.
So I can't
deny
those roots. but I mean, I started playing with you in junior high as a pianist.
Yes.
So,
yes. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, when did we, was that like, back in the bungalows still,
I'm assuming? Yeah, it was back in the bungalows, yeah.
And like
I
what?
I was in eighth grade.
You were singing in eighth grade, or you were playing piano, you said? Playing piano in eighth grade?
Yeah, then, for you and your team, yeah.
Who else was on team? Like Philip? John Soon?
It was like everyone.
Really?
I remember that first practice, I had just, I don't remember, but I remember you were like, hey, Angie's like, come up here and like, like sing. I think like basically asked me to sing something and like, I was like, I will offer up my life.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh man, who was there? I think Phil was there. It was like everyone from class of 2011. So
okay.
Like Ben, Grace, and.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Some other. Whoever else was playing with us at the time. So we had a big team back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I'm glad you remember that. Those memories, man. Those are treasures. You know, the funny thing is that like you can speak both like worship music language and classical music language, you know, and not a lot of church musicians can do that, you know. And I think that a lot of church musicians just don't have that training, you know, like even for me, like I took piano lessons, you know, but like I was never really into like classical stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so like what would you tell like I don't know, I guess, you know, the students these days, like if they don't like classical music, because I think there's obviously stuff that you can learn from it, you know, and that can help you. Like what do you tell your students? Cause you guys still have to do that stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of my students right now, are beginners. So they're still learning basics, at least currently, like in the summer. And I have some who strictly do classical music, and there are some who kind of want to venture into a little bit more like chords and, like jazz and stuff. And so, it's hard for me to kind of relate it back to church music and to that end, because it's like, they're still learning and there's still things that they're picking up on. But I mean, honestly, I feel like with my kids who come to me and they are like, oh, I just want to learn how to play like worship songs and like chords and stuff, but they don't have that classical background yet. Usually I kind of just tell them it's a lot of trial and error, because that's what it was for me. Like, even though I had like all that, I did like have all these years of training, but then again, if I didn't know what a scale was, I probably wouldn't be able to do like half the things I know now.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for people who don't like classical music, you don't have to listen to it to be good at worship music, but there has to be a foundation for you to be exceptional in like things that you do.
So, I agree. Yeah.
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 It helps to learn it for sure, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you led this Sunday with your dad and team. It was good. It was really good. And I noticed that you guys did Living Hope, which is a song that we're currently recording, or I guess you recorded it and I'm currently working on it. You know, the funny thing is that Philip told me one time that, you know, he enjoys that song a lot better now after he heard like your recording of it. So
Yeah.
Like, you know, I guess he helped with the harmonies on top of it. So I'm still working on it. But I guess my question for you is, you know, when you were leading that song on Sunday, I know you were like holding back, right? I know you were, because I have the recording of you for the recorded version, you know, where you're belting it, you know, you're doing your riffs, you know.
Yeah.
And so like, what, like, how do you find that balance, I guess? I want to know what goes through your mind, where, because Angie, I know you're capable of doing it, you know, but obviously like you're not trying to like get glory for yourself, you know, but what goes through your head, you know, like, where do you find that balance between like tastefulness, you know, and like being able to, you know, use all your skills, you know, for God's glory, of course, and not being like showboaty, you know, like, how do you deal with that?
Well, okay. It's a very fine line, honestly. Well, in terms of specifically yesterday, we sang that song a whole step higher than the recording that we did. So
I didn't notice that.
Higher, so I was having more difficulty vocally. But I think in terms of like, I guess finding that balance between like tastefulness, as you say, for me, I think what it comes down to is, like, you don't want to go. I think there's a time and place for everything. Specifically in the middle of a service when, you know, and especially when you're singing about something that is so meaningful, like, you know, this is Jesus Christ who is literally living and he is our hope. And I think when emphasis should be put on those words as opposed to, you know, things that I'm vocally capable of doing. I don't think people need to see that. If it was like a concert I was hosting for myself, maybe. Probably.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
but the fact is, I guess, like, whatever. It's a fine line, because I think there are some people who find that, like, God glorifying, like, oh, she's using, or like, he or she is using their gifts and their capabilities to, you know, glorify God. But to me, I think just allowing the song to speak for itself and just to kind of like simply put it out there and, you know, like as it is, I think sometimes, that can be like more meaningful. And, I mean, as a worship leader, I have had my moments of like, where I slightly like alter the melody just a little bit. If it's like a repeat of a chorus or something, usually I'll do something the second time. But normally I try and kind of keep things as they are as much as I can, not to distract the congregation, and to also, as a leader, like, you're kind of setting the example, so to speak, right? So you want to give the congregation like a clear direction of like where we're going. And yeah, so if that makes sense.
No, yeah, that's really good, actually. I think you made a good point where, like, yeah, the song was like in kind of a unique spot in the set. I think that was like what the song after the announcements, right? So it was like the song like right before the message, you know, like, I guess we're trying to like prepare our hearts, you know, to hear the word, you know, and you're absolutely right. Like that, yeah, that doesn't seem like the right place to need to do something like that. You know, like this seems more like a preparation, more like a, you know, let's calm down a little bit type of deal. So I hear you on that. That's really smart, actually. That's really wise to be aware of like where the song is in the set, you know? Mm-hmm. When you were playing, you're playing guitar, and you guys also had piano and keyboard on your team, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you ever like think that like, oh, okay, like, these other instruments, like, they're doing something, but, like, you wouldn't do it that way, you know? Like...
Oh, like other players?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Like, because, while I'm like, playing simultaneously, or when I'm watching, like, other keyboardists? Or,
oh, well, I meant simultaneously, but I guess we can do both. Yeah, we can talk about both. Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, you guys practiced as a team before, you know? But, like, how do you, like... You know, like, people have their own tastes and preferences too. Sometimes there is no like right way to play something, you know, but like, how do you just be like flexible with like what other people do when you know you play that same instrument too, you know?
Usually, I mean, I just kind of listen. It's like, oh, okay, like, I'll take it for what it is. And every person has their own style of playing. Mm-hmm. Some people tend to like play it safe and stick to like what they know is like within the triad or nearby. Other people like kind of go like ham and stuff. I'm usually kind of the one who goes ham just for fun because I'm
bored. And, no, it's good. I like that. Yeah, I appreciate that.
But I mean, it doesn't usually bother me unless I feel like unless there is like a moment in a song where the piano is kind of like one of the only things you hear and they're not doing much. That bugs me sometimes.
Really?
You could totally fill the space right now. Like, why aren't you? But that didn't really happen yesterday. That happened another time. I was at another church and I was watching like the keyboardists. And there was a moment where I was like, oh, there could have been like, you could have done something there. And like, but I mean, like, other than that, like, I try not to let judgments go through my head. It's like, I'm supposed to be worshiping and like, you know, like, this is not the time and place for a critique, like, inwardly, so,
yeah. You're right. See, that perspective is something I'm always needing to work on, you know, just kind of like, dude, Aaron, just stop being a critic and just, like, worship, you know, like, don't be that guy. Nobody wants to be that guy, you know, we're all just trying to worship God here, you know? You know, the humbling thing about FCBC is that, like, you know, I don't think any of us are really trying to like show off or be, you know, a superstar or anything. You know, I appreciate that about our church. You know, you're still leading in turf, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay. And like I think you said this earlier, like the atmosphere in turf is really small, right? And so like, do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy the smaller atmospheres versus like, you know, being on stage with all the lights and stuff?
I'd have to say yes, by far.
By far? Oh, explain.
Yeah, I think I think it's partially because, it might be, like, selfish of me to say, but, like, in that sense, because it's smaller, there's, like, less pressure.
I think that's also, fair. Yeah, that's fair.
I think there's so much, more intimacy when, even, like, I've been listening to a lot of Zillicum has a couple of recordings of him doing just like acoustic sessions, like, or acoustic concerts basically, and all it is just like him with an acoustic guitar and a bunch, like a huge audience, and they're just singing out loud to all these songs, and it's like, wow, it's like, it's so simple, but it's so moving. And so I've taken a lot from that, and I think also in turf, like, because the room is smaller, like, obviously, everyone's a little more cramped in, and so the sound, like, when the people sing out is a lot louder, and it's, as a worship leader, that's so encouraging that, like, I get to bring these people before the Lord and to be able to sing along with them and to praise Him, and so I think I do enjoy smaller settings better. Obviously, there is a big need for the Sunday morning big stuff, right, but between the two, I would take a smaller session any day. I think.
Yeah. Were you always like that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I never really thought about it until recently.
When turf was just.
When I started leading in turf, I think every time I just go in, I'm like, oh, this is so much better. It's like, I guess between. I don't know. Like, I can do the Sunday stuff. I don't get, I do get nervous, but I don't get, like, crazy stage fright. So that, I think that helps, like, work to my advantage when I'm, like, playing or helping with worship. But, I don't know if I was like that before. Yeah. I think as a kid, like, I did enjoy the stage. And it really was in college that it's been, like, a humbling process of learning to, I guess, like, not, like, want to just have it all for myself and to allow God to work through me and to, yeah. So I think that's part of why my perspective might have changed, but I'm not really sure. I never really thought about it much as a kid.
No, that's really deep, actually. That's super deep. In college, you said that your perspective changed. That's amazing. No, I think that's really good. I think that's really good. And I think, you know, perspective is something that we need to, I think, be aware of, you know, as worship leaders, because, like, we see things totally differently than, like, the congregation sees things, you know? And I think that we see things differently than the pastors see things, too, because oftentimes the pastors might not see things as musically as we do, you know? I think being able to see the different perspectives, and also, of course, the perspective of, like, oh, we're just worshiping God, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's super important in terms of being able to serve the people, work well with your pastor, and just be a good worship leader. That's really good. Thanks for sharing that, Angie. Yeah, and I think we're all growing too, you know. Like, I don't think we're ever gonna, like, make it as worship leaders, you know?
No, never. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Thanks for that. Okay. You said that you've been on stage since a young age or whatever. What's, like, the most, like, stage fright you've ever had in your life?
Stage fright. There's been, at school, there's definitely been a lot of instances, just because, like, I never felt super solid, especially my first couple years, because I didn't feel solid in my technique, and I was like, everyone's so much better than me. And, like, even though, like, our teacher always placed an emphasis on, like, nobody's perfect and we're all working and we're all going to encourage each other to keep working and growing. And even though I knew that, I was always so nervous. So I don't know if there's ever been, like, one specific moment of, like, huge stage fright. There have definitely been, like, I've definitely been nervous.
But school over church atmospheres for sure.
I think so. Yeah. I think just because it's like in school, it's like everyone around me and everyone I'm close to is doing this. And so you feel like you have to make an impression, and like, your friends are watching you and, like, your teachers are watching you. And it's like, oh my gosh. Oh, wait, actually, no, there was a really big moment last year. Sorry.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, I did. I'm not one for competitions, just because, like, when I was younger and I did them, I was competing in, like, hard categories, so I, like, never got anything ever, and until, like, my senior year of high school, like, I finally, like, won second place at this one thing. But but last year I did this concerto competition at school. A concerto is basically, you might know this, it's this huge piece that's supposed to be meant for a single orchestra, single instrument and orchestra.
Sure.
A lot that goes into it in terms, it's a long piece. So I think mine was, like, 12 minutes long. You have breaks, but it's essentially, like, straight playing through, and it's usually all this crazy virtuosic stuff. And it took me, like, Like, I think I spent some of the summer learning it as well as, like, all of the fall semester leading up to that competition day. It was, like, it was so bad. It was, like, a Wednesday midweek, and I was the last person to go. Like,
oh, man. Kidding.
And, like, so, but it was extremely nerve-wracking, like, because I knew all my friends in the room, and, like, I was aware of who the judges, some of the judges were, and, like,
wow.
Even though I had my teacher by my side, like, playing the orchestral part and piano for me, it was still, like, it was just the most nerve. It's probably the most nervous I'd been in a while. And so, yeah, that's probably one of the biggest instances as of late.
Man, thanks for sharing that. It's good to hear that even Angie gets nervous sometimes, too.
Dude, I get nervous all the time, I promise you. Might not seem like it at church, but I definitely do.
Man, well, I'm glad that... Thanks for doing this, Angie. It's good to hear kind of a more personal side from you, I guess. Yeah. Okay, last question. What have you been listening to recently? I know you said the Phil Wickham acoustic stuff, but what else do you listen to?
Is it music?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be worship music. It could be anything.
Okay. Well, what have I been listening to? I know one of my more recent discoveries was I was told about Pat Barrett, who is, I believe, like one of the lead songwriters or singers of House Fires. He came out with his own album. That was like one of the last things I listened to that I remember. I've also, what else? Oh my gosh. I could like go through my Spotify right now, but I think that would end all. What else have I been listening to? Honestly, Aaron, I get bored of music so fast. So I just like go through a bunch of stuff. And there was like this summer rewind thing that Spotify has. And so it like
goes back
through all of your summers and like picks out songs that you were listening to.
Yeah.
So that's been filled with like last year I was on this huge like musical like rampage. And so there's a bunch of that in there. There's a bunch of One Direction from angsty high school me. And
that's great.
Amongst like other things. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm listening to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Angie. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. I had a lot of fun. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks, Angie, for being my guest on the show. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This is season 3 of the Sound Words podcast, and I'm going for a more produced feel. So please send me your feedback or questions for follow-up. You can even send me any questions specifically for Angie to follow up on, and I'll be sure to get to them in the next few episodes. In the show notes, you'll find links to our podcast archive. And don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. My website is musicgoon.com. The email address for this podcast is soundwords@musicgoon.com. And you can always tweet me @musicgoon. Thanks. See you soon.